Welcome to another episode of Mind Hack Books. This time it's the Day of the Triffids. 228 pages, sci-fi post-apocalyptic nightmare. One of our childhood favorites, at least mine. Adam, who's joining us today, also said it was his childhood favorite.
Yes, hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So, also, Paul came back to join us on this adventure. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I didn't read this when I was a child.
That was exactly my question. So you just...
I read it like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So you both re-read it, but you re-listened.
The audiobook's really good.
Yeah, it was nice.
Do they have multiple actors for multiple voices?
No, it's just one guy like doing that. Everything.
Okay, we don't like that here, so no. No, thank you.
No, the narrator is really good. It has kind of the is the style where it sounds like the book is kind of old.
Okay.
Like the old sci-fi voice. It sounds he's reading like an interview almost. Like an interviewer almost.
Kind
of
that's interesting.
Reading a report. The tone of voice, I would say. That's real nice.
So before we get into it, I wanted to quickly catch up. Adam has been falling into the void of Brando Sando. Another victim has fallen. He's been going through the Skyward books, which is Brandon Sanderson sci-fi series.
Yes, it's completely separate universe from the main universe of his.
You say that, but I don't believe you. I think it's all interconnected.
It's quite possible. I don't know.
I think,
really good, though. Really enjoying it.
All right. I hear only good things about all those books, so One day I shall read them, but not now. Paul can be, or might be, the only last surviving person. Last man standing.
I'm not reading that shit.
You are the only person who has not read anything Brandon Sanderson on his podcast.
Yeah, because I have a life. Sorry.
Good
no,
for you.
Just joking. No, I'm not. The only fantasy I ever got into was The Witcher. That was it. So.
Also
it's
coming up
jam.
In the future.
Yeah.
You want to do it?
Oh, okay.
What's
oh, really?
The like longest book you've read, Paul? Is there anything you read that was fiction and it was more than 1,000 pages?
Was it the Dark Water book that I was talking about before?
I thought it was
written,
short.
Oh, it's like 30 hours, actually, the audiobook.
No. Oh, no. I already said yes to that one. Oh, no.
Oh, really? Did you? Was it Blackwater? No, it's Blackwater, isn't it?
Maybe I found the wrong book because I saw it and I was like, yeah, this is a horror book and it's like 200 pages. Let's go.
The guy who wrote Beetlejuice.
Oh, never mind. I found something else. God damn it.
No.
Well,
it was written as a serial, but he put it all together, I think.
Is The Way of Kings the longest book you ever read, Adam?
Almost certain. I mean, read, listen to, but definitely the longest I listened to. It's like 60 hours, maybe 70 even.
I did the same.
It's insanely
oh
long. I don't think I've read anything close to that.
I have Way of Kings PTSD. Just remembering it, I'm exhausted. So, but
like
great
three
book.
Or four books must be over 200 hours long. It's insane.
Oh my God. Yeah, so definitely listen to our episode special on The Way of Kings. I'm trying to look up which number. Episode 26. Definitely check that one out. I suffered hard for that one.
Oh yeah, I listened to that one. It was good.
So like I said, today we'd like to discuss... The Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham, or John Wyndham. How do you read this one? What do you think?
On the audiobook, I think they said Wyndham.
Yeah.
That's what they said on Wikipedia. Wyndham. I always thought it was Wyndham, but it's definitely not that, right? It's just Wyndham.
Definitely not.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So I love this so much. I'm completely biased. This is probably the reason I like books. We talked a little bit before recording that we both read it, me and Adam, very young. And I think this was the first book ever in my life that really hooked me. Because it has none of the parts that I hate about books, which is expensive lore and history, multiple characters, different houses of kings. And it just gets into it straight away. And I love the beginning. I love the opening scene. And it just hooked me in. And it was the first time I was really, really into... like an adventure kind of story. And it felt very real in the sense of not being a happy ending. It was more like a realistic, bleak kind of adventure. and really got me. Like, I really loved it when I first read it. How did you guys like this just now? Sorry, what did you say?
I'll bring it up later. It's fine.
You can say that. It's fine.
No, I was going to ask you, did either of you ever watch the movies?
Yeah,
the
I watched TV them series? Actually today, but not all of it, just parts.
The 1960s one?
So one of the movies is from 1962. 63,
I think.
63.
Yeah.
And the other one is 2009.
Mm. Oh. This is a TV series, I think.
Yeah. And I found it as a compilation, only 3 hours, the whole TV series. It's very short, just two parts or something.
I only watched the first part of it, yeah. So I was like, oh, it's like, they had like Spud from Trainspotting. You know, do you remember him?
Okay.
The weird guy.
A little bit.
Weird head.
Yeah,
I think so. I was Spud. Anyway, okay. And then the 1960s one was, I just watched the trailer, but it was really like typical 60s horror, like dun, dun,
yeah.
dun.
Yeah, I love the opening
plastic
credits.
Plant and everything. Like,
the Day of the Triffids. When terror rained from the sky.
Wow. I can't watch this.
It's kind of charming. Like, I kind of like these old movies, but you have to be in a mood for them. You have to be just, you know, relaxed and talk about it with somebody, like, chat about it, get a little drunk, I guess, or something, just have fun with it. Just to watch it as a movie, it's too old now. I think it doesn't hold up as a movie.
Yeah. It's like a movie night movie. Mm.
So, Adam, I assume you liked it as a child, right?
Yes, very much. I remember it, liking it a lot. Although I don't remember any actual details from the story before I re-listened it now. I remember the Triffids. I still think that idea is absolutely amazing. Walking possibly sentient plants. But I didn't know any details of the story, actually. I just knew I really liked it.
Another reason I really, really like this is it's because I learned English reading this. It was one of the first books, maybe the first book I ever finished in English. Like I had the abridged version in English. It was like 50 pages, and I read the whole book like after that in English. It was my achievement that I can understand, you know, the original in English. So that was another like reason for me to like it. So what's your story, Paul? Do you care about this book at all before you started it?
Actually, I found the book by listening to another much higher quality podcast about sci-fi stuff.
Heresy.
And
get out.
He was saying it was kind of like, we can always guarantee low production qualities as well. But yeah, like he was kind of describing it as one of the sort of like, kind of the first zombie kind of books.
Definitely.
Yeah, and when I was re-listening to it today, I was like, yeah, like a lot of zombie movies and stuff are borrowed so much from this, I think.
Definitely. One of the first ever post-apocalyptic zombie-like adventures stories. So I'm very curious. I reread parts of it. I didn't have time to reread or re-listen to the whole thing, but I read the beginning, which I liked a lot, and I read some chapters just randomly to see if it holds up. But I'm very curious what you think, like especially Adam. He can compare it. So does it hold up today? Is it still something people would get into today?
I think it's not bad. It has its issues.
okay.
It's very much product of its time in terms of how, for example, progressive it is. I think that Wyndham was very like forward-looking when he like came up with the idea of biological engineering, basically, of the Triffids. But he wasn't very progressive looking when it came to women, for example. And that's
always the women.
Like I don't mind. I find it interesting to look into the like how people saw the context, the historical context in which the book was written. I always find it interesting. But here it's very visible.
Okay.
So it was one thing I thought it was like
I knew you guys would bring that up.
The Triffids are actually important to the story, kind of. Not the story itself, but the events of the story. Like, the Triffids are almost secondary.
Yes, it's not very important.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I remember not many action scenes, like fights with the Triffids. It's very sparse.
No, almost nothing. If anything, they just run away from them.
Exactly. So it's not the point. So if you're expecting an adventure where people fight plants and just like, it's not this.
No, it's definitely like a disaster post-apocalypse movie, not an action movie. And in that sense, it's really interesting. Again, like many books of this time, it's the main competent character, which is always nice. I like that, but then he isn't super interesting. And the other characters are parallel characters. Like, it's more, it's really, the book is about the apocalypse that happened and how humanity might survive that. And that's really interesting. I'm not sure I agree with all the ideas presented, but it was, in that sense, I enjoyed it.
The biggest selling point for me then, and hopefully also now, at least from what I reread, is the relatability. Like, you can imagine yourself in those situations very easily.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why younger readers love it, because you can put yourself in the shoes of the main character very easily, and it feels like you're almost playing a game or something, you're going through it yourself. And maybe that's even the point, that the character isn't much of a character, it's more like a...
Possibly.
Could be you kind of guy.
It's a self-insert character, yeah.
So how did you like it, Paul?
Yeah, it's a really well-written, great book, and he tells a really great story from the sort of the first-person perspective, and sort of his recollections of what happened in the past and speculation. It's all fun, and it's really well written, and it's really easy to... There's tension.
Was it in any way predictably boring? Because there are so many stories like that nowadays, like especially the zombie genre.
No, definitely not, because he does a fantastic job of, I think, sort of telling it. He's a really good writer, actually, I think. His stuff's just, it kept me engaged the whole way. It's interesting. I was going to say, guys, every time you talk about a book, you're always complaining, oh, portrayals of the women. Why do you care so much?
That's why you are here.
Yeah, you need a fucking man to fucking send you back. What's wrong with you?
Exactly.
I honestly don't really care. But here I thought it was like really like, I mean, yeah.
That was like 1950 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's a product of
its time. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's just very visible here.
There's a couple of things that actually was interesting. My friend said that in, I think UK is recommended reading at school. It's like prescribed reading. And there's one part at the beginning where they're finding shelter or some random flat or something. And there's like a mirror on the ceiling of the bath area. I'm like, how's the teacher going to explain that to the students?
What?
You don't remember that? Okay.
That's
fun. I was like, ooh, this is a kinky kind of house. And the other part, the first time I listened to it, I just remember the really religious zealot going, what about the marriage act? Are we going to ignore the marriage act or something? It was just like, okay.
Is it the lady in the encampment? Like when they, is it the lady, what's her name? When they go to the like encampment where the survivors, and one of them is very disgruntled. Yeah, yeah, so that's the lady, right?
Yes. Yeah, and they take her leave. Yes, she's complaining about, are we just going to, she's a really religious lady. Mm-hmm. And she ends up forming her own kind of groups.
Miss Durant or something.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, I remember that character.
The other character was interesting too. It's very English, actually, I thought.
Mm.
You know, where the two main characters, they kind of a little bit sort of rivals at the beginning, Coco and the main character. And later on, when they kind of reconcile, they're like, oh, sorry about that chap. Oh, that's okay. Anyway, off we go.
Yeah.
It's like...
I like that. It's kind of charming.
Sorry, fun. I changed you up. Change you to like a couple of blind brutes, but yeah, anyway, it's all in the past. Jollywood. So it's very English, yeah, I think.
That's cool. Mm. It's only a plus, I can imagine.
Yeah, definitely. No, I just want to make one point. I did think there was some tension with the Triffids, but yeah, it was more like a survival horror kind of thing for me, I guess.
Yeah. The action is not the excitement, not the point. It's more about the character's thought process and decisions.
Yes. Yeah, true.
Which is why I like books. The movies are especially not that. Like, the movies are like a B horror movie action, you know. Let's show the Triffids slashing us like in all the ways, and the effects in the first old movie is kind of hilariously charming, and in the second movie it's just CG, you know. CG jank horror fest. So I wouldn't recommend the movies very much. I was about to ask, have you read anything else from John Vidum?
No.
I haven't, actually.
I've read almost all of his books, by the way. I was obsessed after I started like reading in English. This was my like go-to writer, and all of his books are very short, very accessible, very easy to get into. And this is the same with like Orson Scott Card, I keep praising. Like you can get into the book quickly, like it gets going. That's why I like it. Like there is like a thing that happens, and you just go along with the character and you along with the rides, and the things that are introduced are gradually introduced throughout the whole book. And it gives you space to breathe and like take it all in, which I really, really like. As opposed to, sorry to bring it up again, Hyperion, where they dump everything on you in the first chapter and you're just fucked. So that's why I also like it. So John Vidum was born in 1903, a very long time ago. And his name, I can't read, it's too many names. Like, what the hell? Did you see his full name?
Oh, wow.
No.
Looking at it now.
It's John Vidum Parks Lucas Bayon Harris. Bayon Harris. It's like, why do you have so many names? How does that even happen? So he started reading, started writing after under, I think, Mr. Harris. Then he changed again to like a different name. And then only after he's written The Day of the Triffids, that was the first book that he wrote under the name John Vidum. And it became very popular and became famous for that and stuff like that. But I don't understand all these names. Like, did his mother...
That's Picasso.
Maybe. I don't know the full extent of Picasso's name. Like seven names.
30 words?
Wasn't it? What?
30 names?
I don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
So, I don't know. Maybe he's like kind of connected to some kind of royalty or something. I don't know.
Mm.
Could be.
Maybe there's a point you already brought up with the marriage, personally for him, because he didn't get married for a long time because of something called the marriage bar. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's like a historical thing that prevented women from being hired when they were married. And it was just a thing that happened in the past. And he wanted to give his wife a chance to work so they wouldn't marry until it was okay to get married and not lose the job. Because you were expected to have a child soon if you get married, and therefore you're fired, I guess, is the reason. I don't really know what this is about, but it's just old times. He also
sounds like the country where I live in.
Terrible.
It's not far from the truth.
Yeah. So, of course, he's from Britain, and he worked as a cipher operator in the British Army. And also, he worked as a censor at the Ministry of Information. These interesting jobs. He also took part in the Normandy landings and a few days after D-Day.
Oh, really?
So he's seen some important events in his life. I would really recommend all his other books. If you like this one, I would wholeheartedly recommend any of his other books. I was never disappointed. I never read anything that was off-putting or boring. Even if the book was story-wise okay, I always had fun reading it. He has a way to take you on a ride and introduce everything with the characters in a very... not, I don't know, fun, like engaging way, I would say. I just like him a lot. He's one of my favorite writers. Kind of wish he wrote more.
He seems to have done a lot for the, wrote a lot in the pulps as well, I guess. The pulp magazines.
Am I to say the names correctly of the other books? I'm sure you've heard of some of them. This is the one. The Midwich Cuckoos. It's a good one.
Oh, Village of the Damned. Oh, okay.
Village of the Damned, Wanderers of Time. Chrysalids, I remember, I liked that one. What is the one with the wives that are robots? You know that one, the story? The
Stepford Wives.
Stepford Wives. I think it's somehow connected to him, but I forgot who wrote that.
Oh, okay.
If he didn't write it, I think there is a very similar story he wrote before this. But yeah, I just like him. So if you wanted to read anything else, I read it. So we can do any other episode about him. Yeah, so anything I forgot? And in general, I don't have to say I recommend it, but would you recommend it to people?
Yeah, of course.
Overall, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Would you recommend it to people who don't read sci-fi?
I mean, it's really most of the post-apocalyptic theme than straight-up sci-fi. So yeah, still sure.
I saw some reviews saying that this is why sci-fi is trash. I don't understand why that person said that, but I was just curious if you think that's a thing that could happen.
That's more of a book about like just problem solving, actually. You know what I mean? Like, there's an issue and how do we fix it?
That's true.
And how humans sort of like form groups or form packs and, you know, the dynamics of, you know, how people deal with sort of disaster or other sort of problems.
It was very much a big theme and very interestingly described how easy it is for society to just fall apart and how different the values become, your values become if you live in a different society that completely deconstructs, decomposes, crumbles apart. I remember they talked about like jobs and they said, what does it even mean to be a doctor, librarian, whatever in the apocalypse? It doesn't mean anything anymore. And what would you do in those situations? Like in some part of the books, there are some kind of difficult choices the characters have to make. Like if you saw everybody being blind, would you keep stopping and helping everybody? Like you can't help everybody, but it's difficult to ignore a person who's in need if you're right next to them.
Yeah.
So in that in that sense, it was very emotionally influential, I guess, on me as a teenager, because I never thought about these things until this book. So I think that's why I remember it. And this is not at all in the movie. In the movie, they just shoot the Triffids and run away. That's it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That was definitely one of my favorite points, that how we would have to make difficult choices to actually survive the apocalypse.
Mm. Yeah, a few actually tidbits I wanted to mention very quickly before we move to the plot. One very funny thing is that in Czechoslovakia, in 1980s, an organization developed an experimental educational summer camp game inspired by the book. And funnily enough, me as an English teacher on a summer camp, we also did a game with this because it lends itself very well to many activities and like challenges, such as, you know, organize blind people and stuff like that. So it's funny that there's like a historic record that just Czechoslovakia, they did a game to to teach
social
children.
Experiments.
Yeah, social experiment. And another tidbit is that the movie completely changes the ending, because the ending is not like depressing in the book, but it's kind of bleak. But in the movie, in the 1963 movie, they find out that seawater kills Triffids. And they just like, oh, we killed them, haha, happy ending.
Well, it makes sense. They're a plant, are they? Sure, okay. So you just need to push all the Triffids into the ocean.
Yeah, just spray them with the hose and So that didn't fit at all in the story for me.
Okay. I thought the book's ending's a bit more like, it's bleak, but there's sort of a glimmer of...
Hopeful.
You know,
there's a glimmer of hope, but...
You know, we just need to accept
it's a tough world.
Reality, but yes.
And I have to mention the sequels. There are two sequels. 2001, The Night of the Triffids, by somebody completely unrelated, writing a story that's related vaguely, but completely unrelated in the themes and in the way that we like this. So not recommended by anybody.
But, is it just to avoid any kind of royalty payments or something? Like, I've changed it enough, I don't have to pay you anything?
No, I think it's like officially related, but the story is just an action adventure fighting the Triffids, having a community in a post-apocalyptic world. It's like not the themes that are the point of the story. It's just, you know, like a fun horror, like fight the monsters kind of deal. And the same goes for the next sequel that's from 2020. That's called The Age of the Triffids. And that one, they said, is a little better, but it's still, you know, like your average kind of adventure, horror, post-apocalyptic, sci-fi, something. Like, it's okay, like, but it's not, you know, it's much longer. It's twice as long, both of these books, as the first book, and they can't accomplish at all what the first book did. So I haven't read them, but I wouldn't recommend them. From judging from the book cover, I think the Night of the Triffids book cover is hilarious. And I think that tells you of everything you need to know about the second book and also why you shouldn't read it. I put a picture in our notes if you want to see it. If you scroll down, you can see it. It's very colorful. It's like, it says Triffids on it. I think if you look on the first book cover, it's kind of charming. It's kind of interesting. And this book just says like, okay, it's trash now.
When did that come out?
2001. The Night of the Triffids.
Oh, okay.
469 pages. So I thought I would read that because I was excited. I would read, but then I read what it was about and I don't want to read it anymore. So that's a pass.
Fair enough.
Hopefully we have persuaded you to read this. So please read this book. I think it still holds up. And if you read it, continue listening. If you don't care, I hate you for it, but let's get into the spoilers. So the book starts with character called Bill Mason, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm never sure about names. So he's a biologist, right?
Yes, very much. Yeah.
And he gets injured because he works with the Triffid. So how would you describe the Triffids?
What's a Triffid? I was going to ask you the same question, maybe.
Before you saw any pictures, well, what did you imagine?
Well, I already listened to a podcast, so I already knew what it was, but yeah.
I always imagined them like pretty small, tall, narrow plants. I think in most of the like covers, they are presented like really huge. I imagine them about the size of a human, maybe a little taller, but a couple sort of like tentacles.
Yeah, I have a very funny why I imagine them like that. There is a Czech plant that's called bolševník. In English, it's cow parsnip. I don't know what that is in English, but it's very common in Czech Republic. And there is a Russian revolution called the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. Mm. And my grandmother was alive during that time, of course, and she remembers it very much. And the Bolshevik are, let's say, not liked by Czech people, the Bolshevik party. So she would say that this plant is the Bolshevik, and we would have sticks and we would beat it and cut it in half and shit like that. Because it's, I'm not sure it's poisonous, but you shouldn't like, I don't know if this was just anti-propaganda of my grandmother or if this was actually based on something that would save me from getting a rash or being poisoned by this plant. But as a child, I loved to beat this shit out of this plant because my grandmother would support it. So I imagine that the Triffids are Bolsheviks.
Okay. No, I just checked. Cow parsnip is an edible plant. So your grandmother was just beating edible plants.
Because it sounds
she was just
like
pissed off at the commies.
Sounds like the communists.
Yeah, so she's just fucking taking out her anger on the commies.
Exactly. So that's my Triffid. So if you see bolševník in the wild, be careful. Might get you.
It is invasive weed in Czech Republic. So
yeah, we want to weed it out, but it's not dangerous.
Okay.
Get rid of. So I was tasked as a young Philip to get rid of it.
So in the book, the Triffids are maybe engineered in the Soviet Union.
That was my question. Yes.
Okay.
What a coincidence.
Mm.
So they are quite large.
So also, as well, yeah. There's also another thing, too, at the beginning of the book, they mentioned that basically people have put biological weapons, perhaps, or nuclear weapons into satellites that are just basically hovering around the Earth as well.
So all kinds of weird stuff going on, and you're not really sure what that means. Mm. And there are more and more Triffids in the wild, and this scientist, biologist, is studying them, and they have something like a tendon or like a whip that they lash with. They have poison in it.
Yes.
So if you get lashed, it stings like hell. And this guy got some poison in his eyes. It might kill you even. If you
instantly kills you unless they miss or something.
Mm.
Even just getting it like, on your skin is pretty dangerous.
Mm. Yeah. So even if it hits your hand or something, if it's an adult Triffid, it'll kill you. And so the Triffids can pull their roots up and walk. Yeah.
Yeah, that's also creepy. And they rattle like in the wind or not in the wind or maybe intentionally. And maybe they communicate with each other by like strange rattling sounds. Which also
they use these sticks on the plant.
Yeah.
Mm.
So this biologist, he got splashed with the poison in his eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something happened.
Yes.
So he's in the hospital and he's got bandages around his eyes and he's just waiting to recover. And they tell him, all right, so tomorrow, finally, you're going to be fine. You're going to wake up. You're going to take this off and you're going to see this. He keeps flirting with the nurse or something, I remember. I don't know. Is that correct?
Not really. Oh, never mind. He's kind of surly with the nurses, actually.
Maybe that was just the movie influencing me, because in the movie, he was very, very curious what the nurse looks like when he wakes
up. You've also missed the point that he's not really, he's studying the Triffids, but he's also working on Triffid Farm. They're farming the Triffids for their oil, because they produce more oil than sea creatures or whales, whatever. So it's a way to feed the population. Mm.
Yeah.
It was interesting how they essentially, presumably Russia, bioengineered these weapons. Then they accidentally released them. I think they crashed a plane or something. And then people figured out that while they are dangerous, they're also quite useful. They harvest the oil from them and they put them in their gardens as pets. I think that's hilarious.
Maybe you gotta cut off the stinger or something.
Just cut off the dangerous part and keep biological weapon in your garden. Great pet, yes.
I mean, it sounds fun to have a walking plant. Like,
just have to trim it every year so that it doesn't kill you or something.
Mm. Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah. So how did the seeds get out? A guy was trying to smuggle the seeds to a company to sell them.
Oh, yes, yes.
And the Russians kind of got a hold of his plane and shot it down. And the seeds sort of just dispersed into the jet stream and just gone all over the world. So basically the whole planet is just covered with Triffids. I thought this was your favorite book, Philip.
Yeah. I just was trying to, you know, be brief. You want to get out of here
all right,
time.
Sure.
But that's why you are here. You it's much fresher in your mind, so please fill in all the details. I'm very happy you brought it up.
Important ones.
So
he's in hospital with the bandages on, he said. Yes.
And an astronomical, what's the correct word? Astronomic, no, something shit goes down in the sky.
Yeah, it's like a meteor shower, like basically.
Okay, it's an event. And
so it's really bright and colorful and everything like this.
Mm. And people are planning to watch it. It's announced that it's going to be spectacular, so everybody kind of want to see it. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much the entire planet. I'm not sure how it kind of works with the entire planet watches it. I guess it was very long, but...
Yeah. So the premise, everybody who saw it goes completely irreversibly blind. And some people luckily don't, like our protagonist, who finally takes off. So first he tries to call the nurse and he tries to like call people and nobody responds. And then he hears some strange noises and then he finally decides to take the bandages of his face and of his eyes himself. And I remember this moment, how he is very, very relieved and very happy that he can see, because until that moment he wasn't sure that he could see. He would be able to see after the recovery, or if his vision was impaired in any way. And he has this relief, like everything's okay, and then immediately crushed by something is horribly wrong and I don't know what. And he starts walking around the hospital and there is mess everywhere and stuff on the ground, and he finds people who are completely confused and he doesn't know what to do with them. And then slowly we find out that 99% of the population in Britain is blind now because of the event, and everything just goes to hell.
Like, have you ever seen that movie 28 Days Later?
That's credited as direct inspiration from this book, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
I think from this part of the book, there is also a somewhat famous quote: "When a day that you happen to know is Wednesday starts off by sounding like Sunday, there is something seriously wrong somewhere."
Yeah, I just read that quote. That's a great quote. So what happens is an adventure throughout the apocalypse, and I'm not sure how much we should get into this. What details do you want to mention? Like, there's the survival group, and then he goes here and there, and then stuff happens.
Well, he's kind of considering his options at this point, what he should do. Actually, he doesn't really have a family to try to save, presumably, so he's kind of thinking what to do, which in the end leads him to the university. He first finds Gisela. So he finds Gisela, she's like tied to this other blind guy who's using her as his guide,
like a senile dog or something.
Basically. So he rescues her and together they find shelter, stuff like that.
I'm not sure I remember what happens. Like, does he push the guy away, or what does he do? Does he kill him?
I know. Just clogs him, I think.
Yeah, there is like short fight, I think, but nothing major.
In the movie, there is also a discussion with the doctor of the hospital, like the person who was responsible, like the eye doctor. And they have a discussion, and then the doctor commits suicide by jumping out of the window because he realizes what happened. Yes. Is that in the book too?
It's the same in the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so he gets to this university, and that's where the survival group resides.
And they see, like, at night, they see a light coming from the university, so they head there the next day to find out that there is a survival group being organized.
But this is another guy there.
So the guy we are talking about?
Coco.
Yes.
Yes, so he is trying to take care of the blind people, and he's saying that, you know, we just need to hold out a little bit longer and, you know, help will come eventually. You know, we have a responsibility. He's kind of being quite moralistic about it, saying, you know, we can't just leave these people to die, kind of thing. So he's still holding on that someone will come. And the people in the university are like, no, this is it, it's all over, we gotta really just be realistic about what we can and can't do. And there's a bit of like I think the university people shoot sort of a gun into the air and sort of scare them off, kind of thing.
So this is when Miss Durant comes up, or not?
Oh, that's like, oh, kind of, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they have this like a session at the university to decide what's going to happen next. And they decide that they have like a professor of, I don't know, it was sociology or something like that. And he talks about how we have to throw away our customs and things we were used to because this is the apocalypse, and for sake of survival of the species, we have to make some serious changes and suggest that basically we can't help everyone, that it's just not possible. We will just be prolonging their death, and eventually we will all die. That unfortunately we have to kind of pick and choose some of them. I think they have some blind people there, and they took them from some institution where there were blind people, so that they are actually like used to being blind. They're kind of useful.
And they're mostly women too.
Yes, and that's the other thing, that for the survival of the species, we need a lot of babies. So here are women, blind but useful. Just an idea. So
polygamy is encouraged.
I'm not sure if it. Yeah, I guess it does. They do say it here, yes, that polygamy would be necessary.
And that's the reason why this lady disagrees. She's kind of.
Yes, because she's like, I'm not sure if she's a nun or in general just religious, and she doesn't like that, no. And she wants to help. I'm not sure if she actually kind of, she maybe agrees that she can't help everyone, although I'm not sure, but she definitely is against the polygamy. That's
Yeah, she's very Christian.
I like a lot that they have a lot of views on the situation and what people would believe is the right thing to do without preaching anything, just like asking the questions and having different people perspective on it. So I like that a lot. So then they have this system, I'm not sure if it's also in this group or later, where they have like blind assistants and they tie them together and they have like a helper.
That happens right later. After this.
I think so.
Where there is kind of a coup, kind of a coup happens at the university, where there is a group that doesn't agree. It's the guy that was at the gate,
Coco.
I think.
Coco. It's Coco. Coco lures some of them out with a fake fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he tricks them and then he captures them. So he captures Joanna. Is it Joanna? And Bill.
Giselle.
Yeah. And basically, yeah, he is the guy that's trying to basically help all the blind people, but he's sort of taken drastic measures. He captures some of the members of the group and he chains them to basically some others. Basically chains them to like kind of bodyguards who will sort of make sure he doesn't get away, and then assist or drive around the city and try to find goods or materials for the blind people.
Yeah. I remember a scavenging hunt when they are tied to a blind person and they're trying to pick up stuff, which is the reason they adapted this into all these games.
Into what?
Into all these children games, that you have all this one person and it's like two other children tied to them without sight, and they have to guide them, and you know. So that's why that happened.
Now, this is basically where we first, not the first time, we run into the Triffids first with Gisela and her parents, who are killed by them. But this is kind of the second time we run into them roaming the streets, because the area of London they have been assigned to like scavenge in, it's also infested by Triffids. So they have some losses, but successfully run away. I'm not sure the blind people survived that. I don't think so. This is the point where Bill actually like separated from the group he was supposed to. Yeah,
I'm not sure how that happens. I guess they get attacked, and in the chaos he escapes.
Yes, they get attacked. Yeah,
and
the kind of a militia leader kind of attacks them.
He
kind of pops up again later in the story.
Yes.
But yeah, he shoots at Bill, but ends up hitting one of his sort of bodyguards that he's chained to, and that's how basically knocks out the other guy and finds a key and escapes. There's another key point too, is that Bill, because he's been working with the Triffids, he also scavenges a lot of anti-Triffid kind of weapons and guns and things like that, where the leader of the group at the university was kind of a bit sort of dismissing that, like, why do you need all that? Triffids aren't the issue at the moment, or at all, kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know, that is kind of a nuisance, but they're not anything to be concerned about.
So. I did find it kind of, I'm not sure if it was explained, I don't think it was very well explained, why there are suddenly so many dangerous Triffids. Because, like, in London at least, because if people had them in their gardens, then they were trimmed. They didn't have the stinger. Presumably in the countryside, the Triffids ran away from the farms. I'm not sure why they had the stingers. If they actually harvest the stingers for the oil. Yes?
No, wait. There was an important point at the beginning. One of Bill's coworkers, who's really heavily researching the Triffids, he discovered that when you kept the stinger on the Triffids, you could actually harvest more oil from them.
Ah, I see. Yeah, I suspected it's something like that. Yeah. Although, again, I'm not sure why so many of them were like with the stinger in London. That was kind of strange.
Yeah, they often talked about like the Triffids would sometimes escape and they just sort of hoard them back into like another pen kind of thing. So they are kind of sneaky, but they've always had people sort of watching them and sort of kind of rounding them up kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the researcher said, look, you know, he was saying that, you know, if humans lose our sight, you know, he would back the Triffids. So that was kind of hinted at the beginning. Yeah, so.
Wasn't there a point that some time passed, like when they lived in the encampment, and that's why the stingers grew back after being trimmed?
Yeah, after a couple of years, yeah, they grow back.
And that's why there are so many dangerous Triffids, I guess?
No, there are so many because they ran away from the farms where they were not trimmed.
Okay. I also remember he encounters a small girl who is hiding in the house and her brother is killed by the Triffids in the garden. It's like a scene.
I think that's a lot later.
Later? Okay.
Sorry, we are jumping forward a lot there.
Shut up.
We got rid of the bodyguards now. however, Bill is still... like he returns back to the group that he was helping scavenge supplies for because he kind of doesn't want to leave them. Not very nice of like to just leave them there. However, that issue kind of resolves itself because there is this mysterious plague that basically kills everyone.
Yeah, at first I think it's like typhoid or something, yeah. But usually typhoid takes a lot longer. So it's something that I don't know. What is this? But it's basically wiping out a lot of people in London.
Because of the state of society, it's very difficult to do something about it. So it's a completely different perspective on it.
Yeah. However, he does not know where Gisela went. I think he figures out which area of London she was assigned to, but she's not there anymore. And so he returns to the university and there he finds like a note saying where most of the group went, which is this big country house. It's not, it's like estate, perhaps. Yeah.
Yes.
So he heads there.
When he gets there, he finds out that it's the religious zealot Christian lady who was against was worried about the Marriage Act. She's formed her own little kind of community and she doesn't know where Gisela has gone at all. But I think later she kind of misdirects him into a different area.
Coco actually appears here again.
Yes.
On the way to this place, he meets Coco again.
That's what I was saying at the beginning. Like, oh, sorry about that whole misunderstanding.
Chaining you up to
a couple of guys. It's all good. Jolly old. All right, off we go.
It wasn't a great...
That's so English.
Wasn't a great idea, yeah? Didn't quite work out. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Yes, he's like, Yeah, I was wrong. Sorry. Anyway.
You see in so many movies after this, all these people with different ideals setting up their little communities and trying to protect them and enforce some kind of laws, influence so many zombie post-apocalyptic stories.
It's very much a Walking Dead kind of thing, that even though I've never watched it. But
same with the Last of Us and all these, like, it's a very similar kind of setup.
Yeah, definitely.
So this one was the first, I guess.
Yeah. So him and Coco are now a duo, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd feel about that, actually. Probably like shoot the guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not very comfortable company.
They made friends very quickly. Like, I guess it was necessary in the like context of the situation.
Kind of. So anyway, Coco is quite a resourceful kind of guy, and he's quite sort of self-taught, very highly educated. I think quite a good speaker. And then he kind of realizes that quickly at the new community formed by the, what was her name? The Christian lady? I always forget.
Durant.
Okay.
Miss Durant, I think.
Yeah, Miss Durant. Okay. This place is going to fall apart so quick.
Yeah, they have no idea what they are doing.
Mm.
And she needs help, but she's so stubborn. She's just refusing to even ask for it. So he decides that, all right, Coco and Bill decide to come. Go on their journey and find Gisela?
Yeah.
Gisela.
It's really weird. Man. Okay.
And the rest of the group that were at the university.
Yes. What was the guy, the leader of the group? University group? I forgot his name.
He's Beedley, kind of maybe?
And there's another guy, like a general.
Maybe Beedley?
Yes, that's it. Yes. Oh, Beasley or Beedley or something, yes.
Beedley.
And I think that's when they come across the little girl.
They start searching the countryside, basically, for them. They can't find them at some point, I think Coco decides, or they split. I'm not sure for what reason now, but they split. And at this point, Bill runs across this girl, managed to survive till now, hiding in her house while most of her family was slowly killed by the Triffids. So he takes her and he runs across... Does he run across the armed group again? Or no, that's probably a different armed group.
He show up later at the end, the very end.
Yes, yes. Okay, no, that's probably a different armed group that they run... Yes. Basically, now he finds another group of people who raided like an army base, I think, a bunch of weapons preparing for the apocalypse, for all the people from London to come in and eat all the food. Turns out all the people in London are dead, so that's probably not going to happen.
I thought there was just one military group, so once again, I'll shut up. I'm not sure.
Well, it was like a small group, it was just a couple of people.
Yeah, and they didn't really have, they were really out of the loop. They had no idea what was kind of going on. And then I think with that little group he forms, and he finally comes across his woman.
He continues searching for her with them until they give up, basically. But at some point he finally remembers that she mentioned this house somewhere and heads to that place and actually finds it. So they stay there for some time.
And she's living with like two or three other people, I guess. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was someone already living in the house. Gisela came. I think she may have brought some people too. So there are a couple of people, some blind, some sighted. And then Bill arrives with the girl. And they actually stay there for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, basically they have everything already there, kind of thing. They're quite self-sufficient, so.
I remember they had kind of a good deal going there, and then
yes, and then finally a helicopter shows up one day.
Randomly a helicopter shows up. They manage to like attract its attention, and it turns out it's the Beedlis faction.
Beedly, yes. And they've all moved to the Isle of Wight and basically sort of wiped out the island of Triffids and basically are forming a base there. Of course, every spring or something they have to do kind of like a roundup of sort of new Triffids that have popped up, but basically they've eradicated them from the island.
So far, Triffids can't swim, so they're safe.
Well, they're allergic to salt water, as you found out in the movie.
Yeah,
so far. Maybe I could write a new book, Mutated Triffids, who can walk into the water. So they're kind of working on some kind of biological weapon to maybe wipe out the Triffids.
Yeah, but they don't really have the knowledge to do so. So they want Bill to join them, ideally. And he's just like, yeah, sure. But it's kind of nice. We would like to stay the summer before we join.
A bit of holiday first.
Yeah.
Now, at the end as well, it's hinted at that the plague, well, Bill was speculating that at the beginning with these satellites that have maybe certain countries have put up into space, maybe one of them a meteor hit and released some kind of biological weapon into the atmosphere that has caused a plague and sort of wiped out. So the meteor shower wasn't probably a natural occurrence. It was probably something possibly from the weapons that are kind of floating around up in space. Now, one other thing at the end as well, before they decide they're going to have their vacation, the military group that shot at Bill, the ginger head guy at the beginning, he shows up at the house and says, we've forming like a military, and we have a rule there. It's like one person has to take care of 12 blind people or something like this.
Yeah.
And we're going to take Susan away because she's technically not your daughter and assign her somewhere else, kind of thing.
So another group of people trying to enforce their way on them after they've been kind of doing well for a while, but not for long.
So Bill hatches a plan to get him drunk and basically puts like honey into the gas tank, the big military vehicle. And this time as well, like, the Triffids are kind of really breaking in through the fences and everything. Yeah, and they're kind of like surrounding the house and sort of like pushing themselves up against the defenses and houses. They do have a certain level of intelligence, I guess. They're communicating with each other and sort of forming strategies. And when they were electrifying the fence, they're only kind of doing it in the morning and the afternoon, but the Triffids were kind of learning when they were doing it. So they had to kind of change the patterns and stuff. So the Triffids were kind of adapting as well.
I like that part a lot. It was kind of creepy. They were finding out more and more about the Triffids that they're doing.
Yeah, how they kind of like swamped around the house and sort of pushed themselves against the windows and stuff.
Yeah.
That's sort of very claustrophobic and kind of very weird and creepy.
Different type of horror than running bleeding zombies.
That's pretty much it. They play along with this self-appointed government long enough to sabotage their vehicle and run away and join the Isle of Wight faction. Yeah.
So they're going to the island.
That's pretty much the end of the book.
Yeah. Exactly. So the sequels pick up when they live on the island and they try to develop the weapons and they try to fight the Triffids and all that, but it's just the like usual story to fight and survive. There's not much else about it. I'm not surprised there are sequels. It's pretty open, the ending. But I think it's not unsatisfying how it ended.
Well, it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's a very sort of realistic ending. Yeah, it leaves you things to speculate what could happen in the future. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't wrap everything up in a nice little kind of neat package or anything like that. So, yeah.
It's like a very thought-provoking ending, or doesn't tell you all the answers, like you said. So, Paul approved. Doesn't force the answers down your throat like Orson Scott Card.
I think the narrator in the audiobook is really good. He does an excellent job of his pacing and intonation and, you know,
I should check that out. I'll put the clip.
Yeah, he's really nice. Yeah, it's very suitable for the time period of the book.
Thank you so much for summing it up. I forgot all of the details. I should have reread it, but busy with other books that I hated. So, if you're up
I
for it,
I love this book so much, but I can't remember a thing about it.
I remember it. I just don't remember like the order and the details.
Well, I just listened to it today, so it's still fresh in the mind.
Okay, thanks for doing that.
No worries.
Like I said, if you're curious about any other books from John Whedon, I'm very much interested and I would very much reread those. So unless there's anything else you'd like to say, I think that's it.
I think it's a fun zombie book.
Really appreciate that it's not zombies and it's zombies and Triffids and the zombies are not zombies and it's just a different spin on it that's more interesting. It lends itself to more interesting situations and more choices.
I don't think you can say put a spin on it because I think he's the one that's probably like pioneered it, hasn't he?
Yeah, so it's the original, like before the dumb zombie stories. This is like a more clever way to tell the same thing but have more depth to it because the people are people, they're not zombies, but they are kind of useless, so you have to take much more into account. If you have a zombie that's completely mindless, bleeding and dead, then you have no moral quandary to kill them immediately. But you know, if you're surrounded with normal people who just can't be helped because they can't see, it's a much more difficult way to decide or do anything. So thanks a lot for joining me. I really enjoyed reliving this adventure. I hope that we persuaded somebody to read it. If you're still listening and you haven't read it, I think you can still get something out of it, even if you know what happened. So
yeah, I think it's a really easy book to read too. So
yeah, exactly. Super easy to read. Gateway to reading. Please read it. So thanks for listening and see you on the next episode.
Right, thanks. Hey, goodbye.
Because this was a shorter episode, I got two quotes I liked a lot. So one point I liked was that people are kind of sheeple, and what can happen in these apocalyptic scenarios is that some people just can't be helped. The quote is, "Most people prefer to be coaxed or wheeled or even driven. That way they never make a mistake. If there is one, it's always due to something or somebody else." So this is pretty much something I kept thinking about while reading it, like a theme that in all these morally ambiguous situations, do you help those people? Do you not help those people? A lot of people are very indecisive and they just let other people to decide. And then that's how you get all these bastards in power, like Coco. Another thing that came up that I liked a lot was that you have to be resourceful in an apocalypse, surprise, and you have to be willing to learn things, which many people in the modern world are not, and it's very difficult for them to change when they actually are forced into a situation where unless they learn new things and unless they try and fail and by trial and error just survive, they will not survive. So this is a quote from a situation where a religious character is claiming that she doesn't have the brains to learn anything technical, which happens all the time in our world. "It's not my fault if I'm not any good at things like that." "I'll differ there," Coker told her. "It's not only your fault, it's a self-created fault. Moreover, it's an affectation to consider yourself too spiritual to understand anything mechanical. It is a petty and a very silly form of vanity. everyone starts by knowing nothing about anything, but God gives him brains to find out with. Failure to use them is not a virtue to be praised.